Calling all conscious achievers who are seeking more community and connection, I've got an invitation for you. Join me at this year's Summit of Greatness, this September 7th through 9th in my hometown of Columbus, Ohio, to unleash your true greatness. This is the one time a year that I gather the greatness community together in person for a powerful, transformative weekend. People come from all over the world, and you can expect to hear from inspiring speakers like Inky Johnson, Jaspreet Singh, Vanessa Van Edwards, Jen Sincero, and many more. You'll also be able to dance your heart out to live music, get your body moving with group workouts, and connect with others at our evening socials. So if you're ready to learn, heal, and grow alongside other incredible individuals in the greatness community, then you can learn more at lewishouse.com/summit2023. Make sure to grab your ticket, invite your friends, and I'll see you there. July 30th is UN's World Day Against Human Trafficking, an issue that is far more widespread than you may realize. I spoke with Tim Ballard of Operation Underground Railroad about his mission to end child sex slavery. Though it was an extremely challenging conversation, it's very important, and it hits especially close to home for me. Now, I would never compare my experience to what these kids go through, but I was sexually abused as a young kid. And it took me several years to start to heal. And I feel deeply for any kid who's ever been taken advantage of. Now, some of you might find this information disturbing, but hearing this can make such a difference.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to today's special episode. Over the last 1,300 plus episodes, there have been so many impactful interviews that I've been lucky enough to have, and I always like to reflect on some of the most powerful. And this episode was one that resonated with most of you guys in the past, and I'm excited for the value it's going to bring you today as well. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. I first learned about you, I think about a year ago. Someone was telling me about you. But then I really learned about you when Tony Robbins' 60th birthday party, where I watched the videos, got to hear you speak, and got to see the work you do with Operation Underground Railroad. And it's amazing what you have done. It's amazing what your organization have done.
Thank you.
In really helping end childhood sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you can help educate my audience who maybe has no clue about this. Like, I didn't have a clue about
this. Yeah.
What is sex trafficking in terms of the U.S.? Is it actually happening? And what is it in terms of international? What is the problem at hand right now?
Yeah, so this is not a peripheral issue. Most people want to believe it is. This is the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world.
Really?
It's
more than drugs, more than...
It's the fastest growing, really. It's rivaling drugs right now. Because you can sell...
Oh, it's the fastest growing. Gotcha.
Fastest growing. But in terms of numbers, it's actually getting up to drug trafficking. And the reason is you can sell a bag of cocaine one time. But you can sell a child.
Oh my gosh.
You know, 10, 20 times in a 24-hour period. So it's very lucrative. And it's enormous. It's a huge business. Now there's...
So it's a renewable product.
I mean,
exactly. You can recycle the product.
That's right.
I don't want to say it like that term, but...
But that's how they see it. So yeah.
Wow.
So you really start with the bigger issue there is modern-day slavery. That's what this is. People not controlling their persons, right? their own body, their own lives. And there's about 30 million estimated slaves in the world today, and about 10 million of those are children. And then they're sold for different things. About 2 million children are forced into commercial sex trade. The rest are slave labor or even organ harvesting.
Really?
And so we work at that's and so.
So how many in the category of sex slavery?
How many? They estimate there's 2 million. This is State Department, UN, 2 million children. But my experience tells me, because we're in 26 countries, we're undercover, we've been everywhere. And if you're in slave labor, it's just a matter of time before they use you for sex as well.
Wow.
It's interchangeable. I mean, slavery.
How can we make money from
right,
a person?
Yeah. Once you own someone, you think you own them like a product, like an object. You'll do whatever you want with them, right?
Wow. So, how is this even? I mean, are there slaves in the U.S. right now, or is it mostly international?
So, great question. So, when people ask me about the U.S., because most people in the U.S. would rather just say it's happening far, far away, and I'm going to just go like, I'm not going to listen to this. And the truth is, we are the number one demand. I'll start with that.
We buy the products the most.
Yes, we are the number one consumers of child exploitation material.
We're just not doing it in the U.S.
We are. So I'll get there. Yeah. So we are the number one consumer, which means we are the market. So yeah, we are the sex tourists that my group and law enforcement are targeting and catching overseas, hurting kids. But recently,
what would you say, 80% is U.S. consumption,
or it depends. Like in the markets, like south of the border in Latin America, yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
But in Asia,
it's maybe with like half and half us, and then like
Western locals,
a lot of locals. They generally make up the most. They generally make up the most of the market of the consuming side. But the United States just became last year ranked in the top three for destination countries. For trafficking, which means
for other people to come here.
Right. The traffickers say, look, that's the market I want in. If I can get into the country, and then we're really going to make a lot of money. And so they're trying to get their slaves into our country.
Because so then U.S. people won't have to travel.
Right.
This is crazy.
It is crazy.
So they'll just import people here.
Yes.
Kids.
Yes.
Teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're slaves to whatever
they either
want.
Labor or sex. And it's not as...
Where is this at? Is this in L.A.? Is this in...
That's a good question. Because I can go to like a developing country where the infrastructure isn't as great and law enforcement struggles. And you can see children being sold on the street corners of this beach. You just got to know where to go. You're not going to see that here. Here, it's mostly online. Wow. It's in the dark net. So like our warriors out there fighting it and finding the kids are like the Internet Crimes Against Children task forces, local law enforcement, these guys who have the tools to go in and basically infiltrate criminal organizations that are using those platforms to find kids. But for 17 years, I've worked as an undercover operator in some capacity, and I have bought and sold a child on every single social media platform that's out there.
Social media?
Oh, yeah. It starts there often. It will start there and then... leads to private phone calls, and all of a sudden you're negotiating the deal for
in person?
A child. Yeah.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
How many? So you've been doing this for 17 years now. Mm-hmm. How did you originally get into this? I've heard this story, but I want my audience to hear how you even knew this was a thing and decided to go all in on this.
So I started in the CIA, and I had prepared my entire life to fight terrorism, even before 9/11. That's what I was studying. In fact, I graduated from grad school with a degree, a very unique degree in terrorism.
Really?
In 2001.
Wow.
So the floodgates opened for us to go work wherever we want. I chose the CIA, and I was working at the terrorism desk there.
And you were going into terrorism before 9/11.
Yes,
you
already.
You didn't know it was going to be such
right.
a big thing.
It was like, wow. Oh my gosh, here we go. And then one of the terrorists, people will remember this name, Mohammed Atta, who came across the border. He was staging in Mexico, and he crossed the border and went up. And launched those attacks on the Twin Towers. And that just, I was at CIA during 9/11. And I was like, I want to be on that border. I speak Spanish. I want to be on that border to fight terrorism and protect the country from there, from that
wow.
position. So in the wake of 9/11, the creation of Homeland Security. So I was one of the first to jump ship, and I jumped over into Homeland Security. I became a special agent, undercover operator, thinking I was going to be doing terrorism work.
Where were you stationed then?
I was at the Calexico, California port of entry. Right.
So near Tijuana or near?
It's about 100 miles east
inland.
Of Tijuana.
Yeah, gotcha.
From San Diego,
wow.
right on that border.
Where a lot of
there.
People come in because it's probably less of a big city.
Yes, exactly. There's three ports of entry there. It's very busy.
Wow.
And lots of criminal activity crossing that
Drugs,
border.
Drugs.
Yeah.
People. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were finding tunnels, and it was.
Really?
I mean, my office was right on the border at the port of entry. I was loving life, but for 6 months I'm doing this. Then they call me in and they said, "Hey, we feel it's time to start a child trafficking unit." I said, "What is that?" I mean, like the rest of the world, like child trafficking. You could Google child trafficking in 2001, and nothing would come up. Like no one was talking about it. So even I was like, "I don't even know what that is. I don't think I want to do that."
Yeah.
Like that is. I went home and told my wife. She's like, "No way." We were just starting a family, had a couple mm-hmm. of kids. She's like, "You can't bring that darkness into her. I don't want to know what people are doing to kids." You know.
Yeah.
And
how old are you at this time?
I was probably like 25, 26. Yeah. And so I had to go tell my boss, "No, I'm not going to do it." And I was really scared to do it because this guy was intimidating to me. Big, he was 6'4", big white hook mustache, wore boots to work, you know, one of those guys, his whole life on the border. And I was not, I didn't want to tell him no. But I'm practicing my speech literally in the mirror, right? Like, okay, how am I going to say this? And my wife walks in to the bathroom and she's crying and she does not get very emotional usually. I said, "What's wrong?" She's like, "I didn't sleep at all last night." She said, "For the same reason I thought we had to say no to this, because we have children, that is the reason we need to say yes. Mm. Because we understand what a childhood is supposed to be. And if it's true, and we weren't even convinced yet, but if it's true that millions are being trafficked this way, how can we
allow it to happen
and do nothing, right?" So, so then I said yes. And I entered it, and it was about...
So you're already practicing your speech,
yeah.
And then you decided, okay, I'm going to commit to this.
And the speech became one word.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm in. Yes.
I'll do it. He put me to work right away, and dude, it was like 1,000 times worse than I could have imagined. Like right away, it was just like...
When was the moment where you saw something that just said, "This is my... I'm taking this on as a life mission, not just as a part of my job, but..."
It was the first time I saw a child that was from the videos when I was like, "This is it." I had to make a decision at that point. So what had happened was we got intel. An American man was kidnapping children in Mexico, smuggling them into the United States. And in San Bernardino, you can look this case up. His name's Earl Buchanan. You can look it up. You can Google, learn all about the case. He had a compound up in San Bernardino where he was taking the kids and he was filming his sex acts with these kids.
He was having sex with them
and filming it.
And then what, selling it online or?
Keeping it for himself, sharing with people. And so this guy's coming across the border and we're on the scene and we get the kid out, this 5-year-old boy. And it was the moment that he ran.
5-year-old boy.
5-year-old boy.
Oh my gosh.
And I recognized him from the video.
No way.
And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I've never seen one of the kids from the video." And I'm like, I didn't know, I had a physiological reaction. Like, I didn't know if I could handle this. And then the kid kind of inherently knew we were the good guys, right? So he runs to us and jumps in my arms.
No way.
And he's like, he's holding me and he's shaking. And I'm just like, "Oh my gosh, does he speak English? Does he speak Spanish? Maybe both, I don't know." And he spoke perfect English, which was haunting to me because the only reason he did was because he had been with this guy, as it turned out, since he was taken as an infant.
Oh my gosh.
And he said to me, like no 5-year-old should ever have to say to anyone, he said, "I don't belong here." And the pain was so severe for me because I could immediately multiply that statement by millions of kids. And that was it. And then that led to raiding the compound, and we found 11 other kids.
No.
Yeah.
How old range?
About from 6 to 12.
Wow.
So that was my point of like, I had to make a decision. I went home after that operation.
So the first operation.
That was the first time. I'd done a lot of cases where we did the receiving end. So we did like the search warrants and arrests of pedophiles who were receiving child rape videos.
But they didn't have kids there.
Right. This was the first time I saw one of the kids from the video. And it like changed my life. But the change was either going to be I'm quitting forever or I'm all in. Because it's too much to go one or the other. You can't go middle ground on
right?
And I went home that night, after 2 or 3 days, actually, I went home to my wife. She didn't really know what was going on. I walked in the house, and then I see my kids, right?
Now
and they're playing and having fun. And this kid was literally 12 miles away. I lived 12 miles from the border. This was happening to this child. And the whole dichotomy of the whole, how can we be in the same community and hell here and, you know, almost paradise here for these children who have every, and I lost my mind. Like I couldn't handle it. I saw my children being hurt. I went to like and I literally fell down. Like my knees collapsed. I fell down. And my wife thought I was having a heart attack or something. She runs over to me. She's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm out. I'm out or I'm in. Like, I can't, this is so bad. And it was my wife again who said, you know, she got me calm and she said, look, it's hard. I know the pain. You're clearly suffering something, but how does that compare to what that child suffered?
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no, you're right. That's it.
Yeah, you're not experiencing
it. Yeah, I'm like, I felt guilty. Like, how stupid. I'm up on my knee. I jumped up and I'm like, I'm in. I'm in 100%. But the thing that happened, and call this luck, providence, whatever, to me was special, is the little boy had a necklace. That little boy, the 5-year-old. And his sister had given him the necklace when they were separated by Buchanan.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was a little dog tag. And he gave it to me. You know, he knew I had to go find his sister now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and we did. We got her. We got her out.
Oh, my God.
But he gave me the necklace. And I tried to give it back. He's like, no, it's yours. It's yours. This is when he was hugging me. And I'm like, okay. I put it in my pocket. Didn't think much of it. But later, one of my children found it and said, would you get this? I'm like, how do I tell this story to my kid? And I tell my kid what I can. And he says, isn't it cool that little kid put your name in the necklace, Dad? I said, what are you talking about? My name's not on the necklace. I'm like, yeah, your name's right here. And I flip it around. And that little necklace had a scripture from the Bible on it, from the book of 1 Timothy.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was like, to me, I was already feeling like, what am I going to do? Am I going to quit? Am I going to go full in? That necklace, it was like, it was like that little boy, whether he knew it or not, just gave me a commission. And that necklace, I wore that for every operation I did from that point on. And it was kind of like my symbol, like, I'm in now. So.
Wow. And so you started here locally in the U.S.?
Yes.
And then you started going to different countries.
Right.
And you started going to South America originally, right?
Right, because what happened in 2006, the U.S. passed a law called the Adam Walsh Child Protect Act. And what it did was it changed my life. People didn't realize, for us agents, how it did that. But it changed the statutory requirements for sex. We had these sex traveler statutes that said you can't travel to have sex with a child. But you had to prove that the perpetrator had the intent in his heart and in his mind while standing on U.S. soil before he left, which meant before 2006, we had zero prosecutions. So the Adam Walsh Protect Act said no more, you don't have to prove he was thinking about it on U.S. soil. All you have to prove now is that he left and he committed the act.
Really?
And now we will hold him accountable as if he committed it on our soil.
Really?
So it was this revolutionary law.
So now if you go to another country and pay to have sex with a child, or don't pay and you have sex with a child, you can still go to jail here.
And there's no double jeopardy, by the way. You can serve 10 years in Mexico and then 20 more years in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is the law, I guess, around sex, having sex with a minor or paying for sex? Are they different laws, or how does that work?
Every state, there's different state laws,
uh-huh.
And then there's federal law, so it depends what jurisdiction, and
sure.
It's all over the board, really.
Yeah.
And then internationally, same thing. It's kind of all over, gotcha. Which is great to have the safety net in case, like, the guy only gets 2 years and in some foreign country, we're like, well, we got you when you get back.
Right.
And we'll treat you differently. So
how much is this happening now in the U.S.?
It's constant.
Really?
It's constant. Yeah. It's we can't keep up with the demand. Half our operations are domestically. People don't realize that. They think we're only foreign, but we support operations here. We provide canine units that sniff out digital media. You saw some of that at Tony's party, maybe the video.
How do they sniff out digital media?
They're trained just like a drug dog, but they're trained to sniff out like little thumb drives. Because what happens is perpetrators, pedophiles,
they hide it.
They hide it. And this is the evidence. I mean, we'll find a child in here that can lead us to where that child actually is.
No way.
But these guys are hiding it because they know the cops could come any day. So they hide it in the carpets. They hide it in the floorboards or whatever. And the human being will never find it. Well, we have dogs that run to it because they're just trained to sniff out the metallic, whatever it is.
Nuts.
Yeah, and we nail these guys. So we've deployed a couple dozen of these dogs, right? And I love it because there's these beautiful animals, and we chart their rescues. Like Cinnamon Bark is one of our dogs, and and DoTerra is an essential oil company, paid for it.
Wow.
And they say you can name it. We're gonna name it Cinnamon Bark. That's one of their products, you know. So
it's amazing.
So Cinnamon Bark's one. We have Spike. And they literally have, like, Spike has saved 10 kids. Cinnamon Bark
That's
has saved
crazy.
It's
man.
The cool. And you look at these dogs, you're like, I just love you.
Oh,
it's just
gosh.
Amazing, you know. So.
Wow. So when did you, how much longer were you with as a special agent before you left to go start your own foundation?
So what happened was after that law passed, they put together a group and they basically said, okay guys, and let's enforce this. Go out and find Americans.
Who are doing this.
Yeah, and they put me on the team and put, sent me to undercover school and said, now go pretend to be a pedophile or
wait,
a trafficker.
What's cover school?
Undercover school.
Or what is that like?
Dude, it was insane because they sent me to undercover school to teach me how to be a pedophile.
No way.
How to think like one, how to, you know, that's that. That's what
how to talk like it, how to.
Right, how to get in. And I get, wow. I get there and they bring me into a room. It's like a studio, kind of like this, right? There's a two-way mirror and they're going to assess me. Because in the end, it's interesting. They said to us, we can't train any of you guys to be undercover operators. You're just here to, so we can determine if you are one. It's because it's a very unique, it's like an acting and you got to be able to, you know, it's tough, you know? So it's an assessment, right? And they have this undercover operator who's like the instructor, but he's like one of the top guys in the U.S. government. He's a he's playing the role of a general smuggler. And so people are coming in, you know, candidates like me are coming in one by one to be tested. And they give everybody a different legend. Like, okay, you're a drug smuggler, you're a terrorist, you're, mm-hmm. and you've got to get this guy to commit to
believe in you.
Yeah. And so I get my turn. He doesn't know what's coming, right? And I sit down with him like this and I start, I mean, I'm just tripping all over myself. There's cameras everywhere. I'm like, I suck at this. Like, it's horrible. And I've got to bring up kids now. Like,
oh, man.
So I eventually bring it up and the guy's just like, and he says the words out of roll, which means a cut. And he looks at the guys in the two-way and he's like, what are you doing? He says, are you punking me? Like, I have a daughter who's a year old. I'm not going to play. And he left. I'm like, what's going on? So the instructor comes in. He's like, Tim, bottom line, like, look, we're in new waters right now, man. Like, we gotta chart this course. So I felt very much alone. So actually what I did was, because there was no real hit, there was no curriculum yet.
You were creating it.
We were creating it. And I actually started reading every book on the last time that I could read, we knew that slavery existed.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So I'm reading about, that's how Harriet Tubman became my hero. I mean, I'm reading her book, her story, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Beecher, all the abolitionists.
Really?
And that it wasn't a casual decision to call our foundation eventually when I got there, Operation Underground Railroad. Because we use the tactics that they use. They were undercover operators.
Wow.
They were how they used the media, how they used the politicians. It was like these were masterminds. They figured it out, and it's like they're now our inspiration. So we built the curriculum largely off of those stories. Yeah.
So at first they were like, no, you're really bad. But then they're like, okay, you got to figure it out because we don't have a curriculum.
Yeah, I eventually figured it out. And then they sent me overseas. And
where did you go?
I speak Spanish, so they sent me mostly into Latin America. Uh-huh. I worked in Guatemala and Mexico and Costa Rica and the Caribbean, Colombia. And the problem, there was an unintended consequence to all this. Because if I couldn't find the American in the time allowed by the budget that was given, like, I had to come home. Like, you got...
So there would be intel. They would say, we need you to go to Costa Rica. We've got intel that there's these three guys that live there or that are coming there right now. They're selling girls, boys. They're buying them, whatever it may be. So you had the intel. You had to go there, find them, figure out where they lived.
Exactly.
What city they're in.
Exactly.
And then build rapport with them.
That's right.
So it wasn't like, we're going to go break down the house and come in. We're actually going to become friends with them.
Oh, yeah.
No
It's
what was this like your first time,
man? Stomach churning.
Meeting this.
I'm sitting toe to toe with these guys, right? And they'll pull out a cell phone, and they'll be like, okay, "Here's who we got.
No,
we got 5-year-olds. We got 10-year-olds. We got." And I'm looking at the pictures. I'm like, and I've got to pretend.
You have to act like you want that.
Like, dude, she is. It's horrible. Like I'm doing it. Like up here, I'm smiling, and my stomach is just like churning. I want to reach across the desk and just destroy this guy. But if I do that, we'll never find the kids. So it's a mental game that like will crush you if you're not like constantly preparing and constantly.
Wow. How do you manage energy and body language when you know that in your gut you're against this, but you have to in your mind like trick this person? How do they not get fooled? How do you master persuading them when you're against it?
It's just practice and practice. First, they send you as a secondary operator, so you kind of watch. And you're kind of just playing the role of someone who's kind of watching. And then eventually you get to primary, which I got to eventually. And then it's, you know, so it's just practice. And like, it's interesting. I can't really answer that because even the instructors, like I said, they would say, we can't teach you how to do this. Either you, we're just here to tell you if you have it or not.
Wow.
And so that's what happened.
Do you ever feel like because you have to get in that mindset of a pedophile and of, someone who's selling or buying kids that it might ever trick your mind into actually becoming that? Has that ever crossed your mind where like how do you keep your mind powerful and strong against those thoughts?
The answer, no, because once you see it, a decent mind, like, I wouldn't even burden you with what it is.
Yeah.
Because you see what this is, the kind of exploitation and the videos that are made of children. You
so
would
horrible.
Never be able in your mind. And so it's a punch to your stomach, and it gets worse every time.
No way.
It gets worse every time. And I mean, if anything, it makes you less
interested
in any kind of sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm kind of opening up here, but like in the middle of a case, like I come home, I'm like, I
need to be alone for.
Yeah, I can't even like my poor wife, you know, it's like, don't you not love me? Or I'm like, no, hon, I can't even, you know.
You're like, emotionally like broken.
Yes, you're just broken. I mean, it breaks you. You have to like detox. I mean, it's horrifying, you know?
So what was this like in Costa Rica with this first time then for you? I think you said it was Costa Rica, right? Or maybe I was making that up, but what was that first time for you?
Yeah, so probably the most interesting case that I worked where it kind of, this was the unintended consequence the U.S. government didn't expect or I didn't expect is, so I make myself the bait, right? And I'm in deep with these guys. I'm their friend. They trust me. We could be weeks or maybe a month or so away from getting the kids and getting to that point. But if I don't find the nexus, the legal nexus, the connection back to the U.S. government, it's come home. But it's like, but if I come home, this whole thing goes belly up. And so that was the thing I would fight until it pushed me too far to the point I was like, then I quit. And it was a case in Colombia and a case in Haiti. Both, I was doing it at the same time. And I went too far. I went further than I was supposed to go anyway, but I got really deep. And they said, we're the Americans, Tim. Like, we can't sustain this. Washington's going to shut this down anyway. Like, it was no one's fault. It's just there's no jurisdiction.
So unless there's Americans doing it.
Right.
You can't go to someone in Colombia if they're doing it. You can't do anything.
Right. Right.
Because it's only U.S.
The only jurisdiction I have is a U.S. court. So I've got to find a U.S. person.
Who's buying kids?
A child or a perpetrator.
Either
who's
one.
The United States.
Got it.
And so on that Colombia case, we had hit like a gold mine of trap, like I can't call it that, but it's we had hit like the mother load, okay, of bad guys.
And how many kids did they have?
It was over 100 kids.
Wow.
It was gonna be over 100 kids. And I don't blame my boss at all. He did what he had to do. He's like, you gotta come home.
Because there were no Americans involved.
You can't, there's nothing I can do for it. He did everything he could to keep it and push it and make it happen. But there came a point where you couldn't do it. And that's when I had to make a decision. And I called my wife and I said, what do I do? And she's like, my wife, she's like just very stable and very inspired, I'll say. Uh-huh. And she just said, well, it's obvious what you do. Do you think you can save kids? I said, I'm very confident we'll save over 100 kids. She's like, then you quit your job. That's it. We'll worry about, you do the right thing first and you wait, you know, always do the right. How can you live with yourself? And then she said, how can I live with myself? I mean, there came a point in my wife where I was like struggling to stay and do this job. And she said, she ended the debate with these words. And these are verbatim because I'll never forget it because it penetrated my
pierced
soul.
You,
pierced
yeah.
me. Into, yeah. She said, I will not let you jeopardize my salvation
wow.
by not doing this.
Wow.
I said, okay. And so if anyone needs to end a debate with your loved one, that line works. It's a powerful line.
Wow.
So, so that was it. And I was like, okay, if that's how you feel, then I'm in. And we quit and started.
Because you're not making millions of dollars. You're making a government salary job.
Oh, I have no savings.
Yeah.
I have six kids at the time. Okay.
How old are you?
I'm probably now late 30s.
Yeah.
And I have no savings.
Yeah, you're spending thousands of dollars on food for kids.
I'm like, Catherine, I'm just going to tell you, like, this was like fall, like June. I said, December. I said, by June, we're out of food. Like, I don't know how we're going to feed the kids. She's like, that doesn't matter.
Wow.
She's like, how can you live with yourself? There's 100. I said, okay. No, you're right. You're right. You're just way braver than me. Okay?
You're like, I got to protect you. I got to protect the family. I got to be safe.
Oh, it was
you got to provide.
It was a hard month. It was December 2013.
Oh, man.
And I was just a mess. I was a mess.
So this is 7 years ago.
Yes.
So what happens next? Was that the first thing? You quit the job and then you go back to Columbia?
Yes.
You assemble like the Marvel cast of
yes.
Crusaders to come with you?
Yeah.
And like
I have just enough money to do those two up. And
you're funding it yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like calling a lawyer.
You got to buy guns. You got to buy whatever materials.
We got to buy everything we need to get. Yeah. And I'm calling a lawyer. I'm like, how do I make a nonprofit? Like, I guess that's the best way to do this. I had no idea what I was doing. Right. Like, well, we'll set you up. And I got some people to donate, and we just went in. And we had the two cases, the one in Haiti, which is the other powerful story, uh-huh. and Colombia. They're both kind of the reasons I left.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't have enough money to go home. So I would just I would bounce back between Haiti and Colombia until we had success. And we did in both. Both of them were crazy cases. And we ended up rescuing over 120.
No way.
Yeah.
So what happens after you guys go in, you get the bad guys, you know, you break up the operation, and then there's 100 kids. What happens to those 100 kids next for the next 10 years?
Right. So that's the most important part. That's the most important question. And then that's the question we've asked first. Before we'll engage with law enforcement partners, first of all, we always work with law enforcement. We're not real.
Local government.
The local government law enforcement will say, here's our services. In this case, it was easy because as an agent, I was already working with them.
Uh-huh.
I had to leave and then I said, I'm back.
Yeah.
I lost my badge and my life maybe, but I'm back.
I'm yeah.
But I brought the resources and a coalition of the willing, you know, former law enforcement folks who were willing to just jump on in this operation.
Yeah.
But we said we can't do anything until we know what happens to the kids. And so what we do is we have an aftercare department, which is our most important department, which partners with the local non-government organizations that are aftercare centers. And they exist in every country.
Mm.
And so we partner with them and we say, look, we could rescue up to this many kids. How many could you take? And take means raise.
Yeah.
Because you don't know.
Fund, house,
for
feed,
until they go to university. You know, because... Mm-hmm. It's so many times, more than half the time, I'd say, there's not a family waiting for them with open arms. There is no family, which is how they got taken in the first place. Or the family's part of the problem.
Because they're getting
selling.
Paid. They're getting paid. The money. Yeah.
And so we set up with those partnerships so that when the kids are rescued, we know exactly. In fact, the aftercare partners are with us when the raid happens, and they write to the kids, you're safe, you're not bad guys, because the kids think, am I getting arrested or what's going on, you know? So we set it up to where the aftercare team is immediately on the ground and the healing process begins.
And they'll either get potentially adopted by another family or they'll be in a
right.
facility, a home or some
yes,
type of facility.
Exactly right.
Now, what about, you mentioned that it sounds like half the time the parents are involved in selling their kids, especially I've heard about this in Asia, like a lot of their, it's like a form of love to like say, how much money can you bring back to me type of thing. Oh, I don't know if I'm off there, but how do parents, what's the psychology behind that for parents where they feel like it's not a bad thing? I've heard of this sometimes, in some cases. It's like part of the culture, I guess. Now, how do you, as a parent, how could you do that? Like, how do you get to that point?
So you're exactly right with how you're describing it. That is how it is. And it's something I cannot comprehend. It's almost like they're so desperate for means,
so
for
poor.
Money. They're so poor. Yeah. And they're just like, well, I think they just have to compartmentalize and just kind of normalize sexual activity, even if though it's your 12-year-old daughter. Like, you just got to, this is what we have to do, you know? Oftentimes it's cyclical, it's generational.
Yeah.
So it's like,
they were
that's what started. I had to do.
Yeah.
So that's what you have to do. And we've got to break it. And that's been part of the problem, because when it's culturally accepted, sometimes the laws reflect that as well. And so there's a lot of countries where we've gone in and helped them establish their laws where they didn't exist before. And oftentimes, I'd say the majority of the first cases we do, the first investigations we do in a given country, is their first investigation into this. As well, so we provide the tools. We build digital forensic laboratories. For example, we built one in Southeast Asia that services four or five countries there, and give them the tools they've never had before to go into the dark net, to go and find where, you know, track IPs, where child pornography is being distributed. Yeah, it's a nutty thing.
So, is U.S. the biggest consumers of sex trafficking then?
We're the biggest consumers of child exploitation material.
So pornography.
Yeah,
child pornography. Child sex pornography.
Yep, we're the biggest consumers
in the world.
And one of the biggest producers as well of it.
Really?
Yeah, so the we are the demand.
Oh my gosh.
This is why we have success overseas.
Why are we so messed up?
I think it has to do with, first of all, it's the internet. It's access to the internet. It's the technology that's readily accessible here, that we can use peer-to-peer networks, darknet kind of stuff, where we can learn how to use that quick. It's software, and then all of a sudden you're in. And so it takes a degree of technology. And then we have a large population with lots of technology. I don't think per capita it's like a whole lot worse here.
Yeah.
It's just that we have the numbers and the technology, and that together creates.
It's easier access.
It's easier access, yeah. So people become sex addicts easier in this country in mass than in other countries.
There's sex addicts all over the world. We just have easier access to exploiting that thing.
And we have 300 million people that all have that access. So that creates a lot of demand in this country.
How easy is it to watch child? I've never seen child pornography. Yeah. I don't even know how easy that would be. How easy, if I wanted to go on the internet right now.
Way too easy.
How long would it take for me? Is it 30 minutes? Is it
less.
5 minutes?
If you have some skill, like, it's not.
Can you just type in child pornography?
No, you're not going to Google it. No.
Okay.
And no one try that, by the way. The cops
will track you.
Yeah. No, it's not that easy. Like, it's just like a Google search. But there's ways, if you understand the dark net and how different networks work.
I don't even know what the dark net is. But yeah. I mean, that's crazy. So if you can get into that, then you could find it quickly.
Oh, it's if you have.
And it's, are they updating new stuff all the time?
There, in the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a 5,000% increase in new child
content.
It's growing like mad.
I mean, are they doing it because they're making money? Are people having to pay for it? Is it free? Like, how do they?
Oh no, they make money.
It's selling it.
They sell it. Yeah, you purchase access to certain places and
like
networks.
A membership.
Yeah, and then you end up traveling. You know, you get into that world. You get into the networks, and now you're traveling to engage and become a contact offender. That's what we call a contact offender, where you're now
having sex.
Yeah.
A contact offender.
Contact
offender.
Yeah.
So, man, this is a whole other world.
Sorry. I know I'm bringing darkness to this beautiful show.
No, it's okay. I think it's so important to educate people on how to live a better life and how to you know, constantly be educating ourselves on all these different challenges.
Well, we have to, because the problem is, considering the fact that we are the number one demand and we are number three for destination countries, that means that the pedophiles are here. And our kids are here. They're mixed and mingled amongst this group. So parents need to wake up and understand the apps that their kids are using. We had a guy just 30 minutes from my home just a few weeks ago who was gaming with 2 6-year-old girls from Indiana. 6 years old. This guy's 42 years old.
Like on Twitch or something, or like just on some platform?
Well, it started on Facebook. These kids were on Facebook, and then it went. Most games today have the ability to, you can play with other people
on other social media
from across the earth, and it's fun, it's cool. But parents who didn't grow up with this mentality and this of technology, they think their kids are playing the computer, because when I was a kid, it was Atari.
Yeah.
And you're playing the computer.
Yeah, you're not playing other people.
Right.
Live.
So parents don't even think, like, oh, she's playing that cute little game, she's fine. She's been playing for 6 months with a pedophile from Salt Lake City. And the guy got the kids, the six-year-old girls, two of them, to undress and take naked pictures.
How?
I'm not kidding. He just said, just desensitize them. They can read, or he can talk to them, and, you know, and just like, take your clothes off. Put the camera down.
No way.
Yes. And the AG's office picked the guy up and arrested him.
Really?
But this is happening in mass, especially right now. We've never seen it like we have right now, because the kids are out of school.
Kids are out of school and people are in their homes all day.
And pedophiles are out of work. And we can chart, we can track their chatter on the dark net, and they're communicating, and they keep saying, it's harvest time, these kids are sitting ducks.
No, they're not. Yeah. They're not saying this.
They are.
How many?
6 million, up to 6 million additional reports from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children than the same time last year. And we won't even know the ramifications. It'll take years before some of these victims come up, because these guys are, the lines are out in the water right now.
Oh my gosh.
We take for granted the infrastructure of schools and after-school programs and sports programs. We take for granted how safe that makes our kids from these online predators, because that's where they are. They're online.
So it's easier to fish now, is what
you're saying. Oh, yeah, because the mom and dad are worried about their jobs. They're scavenging for food. The kids, hey, they're told, take the smartphone, take the laptop, stay here, play games, do your schoolwork. We got to go figure
out. It's almost less safe to be on a tablet than it is to be at an after-school program.
100% less safe to be
home. I mean, you know, you hear stories about, is it Larry Nassar, I think, the...
The gymnastics, U.S.
doctor. Yeah. It's like, okay, you felt like your kids were safe at a U.S. sanctioned training program, but this happened to hundreds of girls, but it's less safe.
Right. It's a great point. Some people say, well, I get worried about after school programs.
This is a credible doctor who's like creating educational videos.
And that happens as well. Yeah. But this, in terms of the sheer numbers, is way more threatening, because there's millions of pedophiles.
It's easier to do it.
There's millions of kids. They know the parents aren't paying attention because they're worried about their livelihood.
Yeah.
And they just access the kids and they start gaming with them. They friend them on, you know, on Facebook or whatever. And all of a sudden it's on and it's horrible.
What are two or three things that parents can do now that they have this information to protect their kids against any type of sex offenders?
So the most important thing is understand the apps your kids are on. Understand the social media platforms your kids are on. Know if people can access them pretty readily, pretty quickly. And that's the problem, is parents just, if you're my age or older, we missed it. We missed the internet. So we didn't grow up understanding, with raging hormones and undeveloped brains. We didn't have to deal with internet too. Our kids do. And so parents just don't know there's an education.
What are the most challenging apps they should be aware of? Or is it all social media?
It's all social media. Anywhere where you can connect with bad guys.
Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram. It doesn't matter.
The parents of those six-year-old girls I told you about, they said, we had no idea. We thought the kids were just playing the computer.
Wow.
No. They were playing a pedophile and the little kid game, whatever it was. And so parents, that's the number one thing. Know what your kids are doing. Understand the applications. If you need help, you can go to your internet service provider and say, hey, can you send me a record of every... You own that phone that you give your kid, right?
Right.
They can give you a record of every site that's hit, every game that's played.
Conversations, yeah.
Right, every conversation.
What's the conversation that a parent should have with their kids, whether they're 5 or 15, to at least educate them a little bit without scaring them? You know, but what can a parent say, whether they know something's happening or not, to prepare them for that?
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
So it's a great question. And for me, having 9 kids, you have to really meditate and pray and focus on each individual kid and customize that answer. Because
wow.
if you come in too early, you could hurt them. It's a tough subject, you know. But if you come in too late, you could also hurt them. So when they start asking questions and when you kind of feel your intuition, luckily I have my wife who I can say, when is it time for this one? It's now. Okay, let's have the talk. And then what you say also is customized, you know, to what you think they're ready for.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be in front of it. Whatever that answer is, that's the key. Have a close relationship with your kid. Be their friend and their parent and connect with their soul so that you can get that inspiration. Okay, now's the time and here's what I'm going to tell you. Too often we say nothing because we don't want to talk about sex and you know, it opens that whole door, birds and the bees, and parents just ignore it. That's the worst thing you can do. Because then someone else is going to teach them and they're going to get hurt. So it's just tuning into that kid.
Wow, that's the responsibility you have as a parent to be a leader and to have hard conversations.
Yeah.
And I'm not a parent yet, so I don't look forward to it, but I also know that I'm going to rise to the occasion and be able to have the courage to be able to have those hard conversations. How do you categorize a pedophile, and how many of them are there in the USA?
Well,
like, what's the definition?
Someone who actively seeks sexual interaction with a child.
In-person contact,
there's still a pedophile. You could not become a contact offender quite yet, but they all want to become. It's like someone who looks at porn, right? An adult who's looking at porn. I don't think anyone looks at porn with that being the end, right?
Right.
They want to take action eventually, and that's how child pornographers are as well. They're eventually looking to take action and become a contact offender.
That's crazy. So how many are there?
I couldn't give you the exact number, but we do know this. There's the fact that there's 2 million children in sex slavery. Consider what kind of number justifies demand.
It's probably 50x, right?
Exactly. It's like any other market.
The percentage is going to take
action. If they need 2 million kids, that means you're going to have a market of
2 million 50x. US or 2 million
worldwide? That's worldwide.
Global, yeah.
Yeah. And, but the US number keeps rising. There's a couple hundred thousand, we estimate, children.
Wow.
But that number, there's about 18,000 women and children a year who are smuggled in to the United States for the purposes of being exploited as slaves.
And is this a financial transaction, 300,000 kids, or is this sexual abuse?
There's a mix of both of those.
I mean, for me, I was sexually abused when I was 5 by a man that I didn't know.
You're kidding me.
No,
I didn't know
this. Yeah, and the babysitter's son, he was probably 16 or 17, I was 5. It's one of my probably first 3 or 4 memories I've ever had.
Oh my gosh.
For 25 years, I didn't tell anyone, and it deeply shaped my life. It only happened once. I can't even imagine something happening over and over again and not feeling comfortable or safe. And it deeply impacted the way I think, the way I took action, how I was defensive and like everyone, I felt like everyone was out to get me. It was like everyone's trying to abuse me, everyone's trying to take advantage of me. And it showed up in every area of my life, from sports to teachers to relationships to business partners, until 6.5-7 years ago, I finally opened up and started to heal and started talking about it for the first time. For 25 years, no one knew about this.
Wow.
And it was one of the hardest things I ever did, was talking about it. And then I knew that this had power over me because I was so afraid of what would happen if people knew this about me. The more I talked about it with family, then friends, then I finally opened up publicly about it on my show. And the moment when it was no longer like scary to talk about it, when I realized, like, okay, now my healing is starting.
Yeah.
And it's been an amazing 6.5-year journey of healing the past, letting go, forgiving, obviously not forgetting, it's always going to be with me, the memory, but the ability to have peace in my heart and move on and see what can I do moving forward to make sure that other people aren't sexually abused.
No, yeah, what so you're doing is so important because this is the problem is people, to heal, they've got to come, they've got to start talking about it.
You have to
right?
talk about it.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can really heal is to start sharing with someone, whether it's a spiritual pastor, a therapist,
right.
a parent that you trust, a friend you trust. But when you hold on to this secret and you don't tell anyone, you're going to suffer.
Right. Now imagine, Lewis, that's happened once, right?
Yeah,
to you.
One time. Imagine happening every day, every week.
Yeah, imagine. So I was with a neurologist once because I had to understand what's going on with these kids. And he says, Tim, let me show you something. He showed me two brains, scans of brains, two children's brains. And he says, do you see the scarring in the, what's going on? He said, one of these brains was a traumatic car accident. This other one was a child who for 5 years was sexually abused. And I was like, wait, what?
Very similar.
So that's what, I mean, it creates actual physiological scarring in your brain.
Absolutely.
And this is the problem. So the rehab part.
The chronic stress, the chronic fear, all these different things.
Yes, it actually creates physical brain damage that requires physical healing of that brain. Which,
emotional healing, physical, spiritual healing.
It is. And when I saw that, I can't tell you how motivated I was to get back out and just start nailing these guys. Because this is... I mean, there's nothing worse in my mind in earth or hell than this. Most of these kids would rather that they were killed than go through this, you know? Our sentencing so far, I don't think really reflects the real damage that's being done. And it's because people don't want to talk about it, right? The more we talk about it, the better our justice system will be, the better our aftercare services will be. But this is a very real, very, very real threat to all our kids.
And how's the process work for you, if you can break it down for me? How do you decide who you're going to go after? Is it, okay, we're assessing the dark web information first. We have researchers on your team that are finding this person's got 50 kids, this has got 20. You know, how do you guys assess, like, where you're going to make the hit?
So when I first left the government, I had basically pending cases, right, that I couldn't work because they were outside my jurisdiction. So those first ones, like the one in Colombia and Haiti, those were easy. But then after that...
It was like, now where do we find the next
one? So it's funny, great question, because I'm like knocking on doors like, can I work? Can I help you guys?
Yeah.
Because those two hits were successful, so we got more donation dollars. So I'm like, and I had to actually convince people, like, you have a problem, we can help. We were turned down. 7 years later...
Turned down by what? Governments, countries?
By governments, by law enforcement. Like, we don't need your help. We're fine here. We don't think there's a problem, you know. Today, 7 years later, we are saying no. Like, we can't keep up. Everybody's asking us, hey, so-and-so told us you did X, Y, and Z in their country. Can you help us with this piece? Can you help us with that? And so now what we have to do is we have to find the law enforcement units around the world. We're in 26 countries. The ones that can sustain our tools. So if we give them something and give them training, that it's a scalable solution they have, you know, so it's not just us doing the work and then leaving. So that's how we kind of judge it right now. We wish we could be everywhere, but we have to go to where they're most prepared to make the biggest difference, the biggest impact.
Of course.
So.
And what are the top three countries right now that have the most cases and the biggest problem?
I think Southeast Asia
really
is that whole region is just
bad, huh?
Just so sad and so terrible. But the law enforcement is doing amazing work, and we're working really closely with them. That's where we put our first digital forensic lab, and so now they're going in and routing out the bad guys in there.
And it's 50% locals, and it's 50% kind of U.S. based who's coming in and committing the crimes.
Yeah, lots of sex tourists. The locals
how
are.
How big of an industry is the sex tourist industry? How much money?
Okay, well, human trafficking altogether is $150 billion
no
a
way.
Year. $150 billion. And so to put that into perspective.
How much is the sex tourism in human trafficking?
That's about $35 billion, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. Just the sex alone is $35 billion.
The contact, the sex, the physical sex, not the digital. Consumption of media, right?
Yeah, $35 billion in the selling of people for sex.
Gosh.
$35 billion. If you can imagine that number. I mean, and then you bring in the slave labor, and that's what gets it up to $150
billion.
Human
trafficking in general,
Human trafficking in general. And to give some perspective, because that number is so big, with the amount of money made buying and selling people every year, you could buy every Starbucks franchise in the world, you could buy every NBA team, and still have enough money left over to send every U.S. child to college for 4 years. That's how much money is spent in modern day slavery every year. That's why I say this isn't a peripheral thing.
Right.
even though we act like it is because we don't want to address it. We don't want to engage it. It hurts.
Why do we not want to address it?
It hurts. You know, it's just, it's, I know why, because I didn't want to address it. I tried to quit many times.
Okay? Really?
And my wife always turned me around and said, you can't, sweetie.
Oh my gosh.
You know, because here's what happens, and this is what happened to me, is you see children being hurt and you can't help it. You superimpose your own children's faces on those children, and then you just can't bear it, right? You just can't handle it. I mean, I had to go to psychotherapy to not do that. The mandatory, they sent us every year to get checked out.
Yeah.
I'd go every year and think, okay, this is my year that I'm gonna, they're gonna boot me out because I know I'm crazy, and like, oh, you passed, Mr. Ballard, congratulations. What?
Save me.
Because I thought I was crazy. No, you're fine. Okay.
Wow.
But one of the things that was the hardest thing for me to kick is learn how to not see my own child's face so I could deal with it. Later on, about 15 years later into this, I changed my tune and I allowed myself to see my kids' faces, and that made all the difference, because all of a sudden now I'm pushing the envelope.
It's more, you're more connected to it.
Yeah, what happened was I came across a situation a few years back where we were going into a child trafficking center, and there was 28 little children that were being sold.
Little meaning under 12?
Oh, from 1 to 12.
Gosh. For sex.
For sex. And so I'm walking in there, they think I'm a customer, and I'm walking in and I see all these kids.
Like a storefront?
It was an orphanage front. They were claiming to be an orphanage.
No way.
Yeah, this was in Haiti. They were claiming to be an orphanage, but all the kids were mostly kids they collected after the hurricanes or earthquakes. The parents die and they say, oh, come to our orphanage. Well,
oh,
it's not
gosh.
An orphanage. So we were actually tracking a missing child that we knew had been there. And so that's what got us in there. And when I saw the kids outside the gate, I was about to go in, it was almost like a PTSD reaction where I'm like, oh, I'm seeing my kids. Okay, do the training they taught you. But instead I said, you know what? What if I don't do that this time? What if I let it happen? Mm. What if I just allow these kids to be my kids? So I went in there and I was like, oh my gosh, I never should have done that technique. I should have always done this.
Mm.
And this is what I encourage
before
everyone
you were
to
wearing
do.
Like a mask.
Right.
So you wouldn't feel it as deeply, but now you're feeling it so deeply.
So deeply. And what wouldn't you do for your own child?
Oh, wow.
So now I'm willing to go the distance, right? And that case got nuts. And it's funny, I know this experiment led to this. After we rescued 28 kids, we did the whole sting by, and I ended up adopting two of the kids rescued, who are now my kids.
In Haiti?
Yeah. It was a preventative strike. Turns out none of them have actually been sold yet. They're all being sold. And so, yeah, so two of my kids now, they came from that operation.
Wow.
So they literally,
your kids.
They became my kids, yeah.
Wow. How many kids do you have now?
I have 9 now.
Wow, seven from birth of your
seven, yeah, biological.
From your wife, yeah, mm-hmm. And then two
and
adopted.
Then two adopted,
Haiti.
Yep.
How many more? I mean, how many do you want to have?
Oh man, the prenup said six. Okay, when we got married,
really?
Yeah, then we were done at six, and we were both done. We're like, we got the six. I came from six. My wife came from six.
Yeah.
And then this case happened after that, and we saw these kids, and it was just like, here's my wife again. I called her. I said, you won't believe this. What I just saw, these two little kids, it was the two kids I actually bought in the sting operation. I mean, I just grew attached to them. And it was my wife who just had this experience, and she just said, I want to be their mom.
Wow.
I said, no, you don't. You can't do this. Like, we can't do this. You know, I want to be their mom. So that's how it started, and we ended up bringing them home. And then the seventh one came, defying all science, somehow.
It happened.
So.
How much does it cost to buy a kid? I mean, to buy a kid? Is it to buy them to own them? Is
to
it
own
to buy them.
Them
to have sex? What's the difference between?
They do both. Okay, so generally, if you're going to take a kid, if you're going to use a kid for the weekend or something, you can probably double or triple the price of what the adult sex market would be. Whatever a prostitute, you know, sex worker, whatever you want to call it,
you can double or triple it.
Double
for
or triple
kid.
for a child
for a night or for a weekend. Or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
For purchasing. It depends what the country, but those kids they sold me that became mine were $15,000 each. But the work
$15,000 for a person's life.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Just say here, it's yours.
In the Middle East, where we're dealing with ISIS, and we're working, and this is where we're getting to organ harvesting, and a pediatric heart is up to $250,000. So that's
a kid's heart.
That's how much it sells in the black market.
How often is this happening with organ harvesting?
In the Middle East, quite a bit. So ISIS rolls in 2015, and they make sex slaves out of the Yazidi people, these beautiful people that are just peaceful, they're living in northern Iraq and a little bit in Syria as well. And ISIS came in and just said, you are less than human. And they just took him and made sex slave markets out of them. Also, a lot of the Christian communities were devastated in a similar way. Eventually, ISIS gets pushed off its sovereign territory and was making its money by taking over cities.
Wow.
And like taxing people. So they lost their oil revenues when they got pushed off the land, but they kept the kids. And so like, well, I got to make money. So they start selling these kids to sex slavery or to organ harvesting.
Oh my gosh.
We've taken down 2 organ harvesting rings in already so far. So we, this is...
Do they
this,
keep the kids alive after they take out some of their organs, or is it you're dead? Obviously,
it depends. But, yeah, and not if it's a kidney or something.
They just take it out and then okay, see you later.
Yeah, you can. There's people are finally reporting on it. I think CBS or ABC News recently did a story on it. But we're in the middle of it. This is the Nazarene Fund. I'm the CEO of also the Nazarene Fund, which is a sister organization with OUR. Mercury One, Glenn Beck started that.
Oh wow!
And then I took it over three years ago.
Yeah,
but Glenn Beck's still the founder.
He
was the godfather of OUR as well. He gave us all our first money.
Glenn
The money I needed to rescue those kids in Colombia and Haiti, that was Glenn.
Really?
He was the only one. He was the only one that took the chance. He's like, I'll front it. Go for it. I'm like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. He got me the money. It was pretty intense.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, risked his whole media company.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
His lawyer said, don't do it. If they fail or someone gets hurt, you're screwed. He's like, I don't care. It's like, I'm not going to go to my maker and tell him I said no. It was an amazing story. So he asked me to run the Nazarene Fund 3 years ago. So that's our work in the Middle East, which is just the stuff with, and we're extracting these kids. I mean, we're going in and taking the kids out.
So have you found kids who've had, organs taken out or?
Oh yeah. No, there's the ones that are surviving.
Kidneys
yeah.
and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
So you find them and they're sewn up or whatever?
And... Yeah. There's been, like I said, there's some mainstream media have gotten into it, thank goodness, in the last several months. And you can see, people can go on Google and you can see it. They're stitched up. But if you're a small child, they're going to make their most money off of a pediatric heart.
Really, $250,000 off a heart.
They're very high in demand. Yeah.
Man, this is crazy, man.
Yeah, servicing markets generally outside the United States, right? Like these are markets in countries there's no regulations and there's just
crazy,
it's just black market stuff.
The work you're doing is really amazing, and you've got a movie coming out, which I got to see a trailer of it a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And when's the date it's coming out? Do we know it?
We don't know.
Later in the year.
COVID shifted everything, so we don't really know. But the film is locked. It's done. Stars Jim Caviezel, Mira Sorvino, Bill Camp.
It's going to be amazing.
It's these guys are artists. They're geniuses. They did a very good job.
And what's the movie called? And what's it telling the story of?
It's called The Sound of Freedom. And it basically tells the story. A lot of it I just told you.
Yeah.
Like, for example, with the little boy in the van, they actually filmed that scene exactly where it happened with the necklace and all that.
Oh, my goodness.
And it gets into Colombia, the Colombia raid where we rescued the 120, our first big operation that rescued 121, yeah.
And what's your mission moving forward with the movie, with just everything you're up to? Is it to end sex slavery? Is it to rescue a certain amount of kids a year?
It is to end it.
Yeah.
So we did an experiment. And it was very telling. In 2014, we put almost all of our resources into the northern region of Colombia.
One region.
And we just said, just pounded.
How do we
pounded,
get rid of it?
Pounded. Like every month, 2 or 3 operations and empowered law enforcement. And then to the point where they stopped. And the would-be trafficker said, yeah, I had to give it up. I'm into drugs and I'm doing something. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And so we did it. We knew it would happen. It's logical. Like now there's a consequence. There wasn't before. But we did it to show, like, if everybody would focus on child crimes, if we all did it together, we could end it. But it's not going to be governments alone. It's going to be people getting loud, which is, we have an opportunity right now because people are getting loud about it for the first time in a long time, or maybe ever, on July 30th, which is this anti-human trafficking, world anti-awareness day.
Yeah. So how can my listeners get involved, whether a small way or they want to get involved in a bigger way? What can they do? Can they go to your website? Can they email you?
People can go to our website,
message?
OURrescue.org.
OURrescue.org
is the website. Look at our videos, and there's something on there that says join the fight. We have all sorts of ideas people can do to get involved. So if people want to go out and get that commission and a little symbol that reminds them of the fight, you can go to freedomdogtag.com. It's an opportunity for people not only to kind of get their symbolic commission, but for every 30 necklaces sold, we literally, with that money, we can rescue a child. People can also text help them to 51555, and we're giving specific instructions on how you can get involved in your city on July 30th. Mm-hmm. 60 cities have already committed to get loud in some way. They'll go to a park, you know, obey the laws and the social distancing, but that's generally go to a park, and local leaders will show up and commit that we're going to do more for kids and make sure the kids in your community are protected.
Wow, man. Yeah. It's exciting. And if you want to be a part of helping spread the message, make sure to share this video out or share this audio out, and make sure to follow Tim. What are you on social media?
TimBallard89.
TimBallard89. Make sure to follow Tim. Make sure to tag him when you're sharing this out so he can follow up with you as well and stay connected. I know you do a lot of other stuff behind the scenes that I want to get into hopefully soon in Utah and be a part of learning about how you guys
actually do this. Oh, yeah, we're bringing you up, man. We're going to put you into one of our training programs.
Lock me in. So the movie, be aware. So if you go to the website, if you sign up, you follow you, you'll be able to watch the movie when it comes out. You'll
absolutely. We'll keep you up to date on everything. Everything else.
You've got a bunch of books to talk about this as well. If you want to dive in down the rabbit hole, you can read
Yeah, I got lots of content for you if you want to learn more.
Exactly. But this is an amazing mission that you're on for me, who's been, you know, I wasn't sold, but I dealt with sexual abuse. And I know the trauma that it has in the years of unwiring that it takes to feel normal, to feel like the world isn't out to get you, to feel like your stress levels go down, to feel like I couldn't go to sleep at night. It took me hours to go to sleep every night until I was about 30.
Oh my gosh.
And then when I started to heal, I could finally sleep.
Yeah.
So I know what it does to the wiring of a human being with sexual abuse.
That's right.
I can't even imagine what it would do to someone who's being sold by their parent, not by their parent, over and over and over again for years. I couldn't even imagine how you would start to heal. So what you're doing is an amazing gift and a service to humanity, and I really acknowledge you for that, Tim, for being an incredible leader in this space, being a hero in this space,
and
using your wisdom, your skills, your tools, your resources, your relationships to make the biggest impact in this space. And I want to be a support for as long as I can on this. This is
thank
a big part
so
of
much,
me
Lewis.
That I want to help out as well. I want to ask you a final few questions. This is called the three truths. So I want to imagine it's your last day on earth.
Okay.
And you go somewhere else after your body dies, right?
Okay, yeah.
But you've accomplished every dream you could think of in your whole life, for your personal life, with your family, your kids, for your businesses, for your foundation. Anything you can imagine, it's come true. But for whatever reason, all of your work has to go with you. Your videos, movies, content, it's got to go with you to the next place. But you get to leave behind three lessons you know to be true. You get to write it down on a piece of paper, and this is all we would have to remember you by, are these three lessons, or what I like to call three truths. What would you share with the world that are your three truths?
I think the first truth, the most important truth, and this comes from years of trying to find light in my darkness. Because to work in this world is so dark, and it will destroy you. It will destroy you. I needed to find light. And so my advice to people would be, or you know, what I would share is, because we all have darkness, I don't care who you are, you don't need to be fighting trafficking, right? Darkness is everywhere.
Yeah.
So my mind would be based on how to get light in your darkness, and the number one thing is serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
Service turns the lights on. Tony Robbins taught me this. I mean, I knew it just functionally, but until he put words to it in the research. I mean, when you serve people, something happens to your brain. Mm-hmm. Like there's a physiological, in my mind, it's God. I'm a faith guy. And when you serve people, your brain literally releases serotonin and endorphins and oxytocin.
Yep.
And what it does is people that have an excess of those beautiful.
You feel better.
You feel better.
Yeah, you're healthier, and you're happier.
You have more courage. You have more optimism. This is science, right? Now, in my mind, what that is it's also, I believe it's God preparing your body to commune. Mm-hmm. And with the God, your creator, whatever it is, I don't care. But a higher source that will then give you, that you need to be a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. And so service has all these benefits apart from just doing the good of helping somebody. Mm-hmm. It's this amazing thing that turns the lights on in so many ways.
So service, number one, to other people.
Number two is kind of related to it, but it's that communion part. It's prayer, meditation, whatever you want to call it. But connecting to that greater being, whatever that is, and getting that positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just makes, if you're a better version of yourself, you are a blessing to other people, right? Yeah. So it's not a selfish thing. It's actually a selfless thing.
Yeah.
Get yourself good,
because
then you're good for others, you know? And so number two, I'd say that. It's that meditation, that communion.
Mm-hmm. And number three?
And the number three is find at least one person that you really love and that really loves you back. There's a lot of relationships, you know, where you don't have time or there's the ability to connect that way. But for me, it's my wife. But find that person, because I've told you many stories, and the coolest stories I told you was actually me running away and my wife turning me back around.
Mm.
Thank good, none of this would happen. I wouldn't be sitting here with you if she hadn't turned me around when I ran for cover throughout my life, throughout my career, and I credit that relationship.
Wow.
What's
the thing you love about Catherine the most, your wife?
She does the right thing no matter what. And it doesn't matter the consequences.
Mm.
I mean, she literally said to me, if we end up on a beach in a tent and that's where we're living because we did this, I don't care.
Right.
We have to do the right thing by these children and by God. And the right thing is to quit and leave everything. I mean, I calculated it was millions of dollars in pension, and I had a whole charted out. My life was charted out.
Right, right.
I'm like, Catherine, we're watching. She's like, doesn't matter. These are real children, and there's consequences for
And if you say one, it's worth it in her mind.
Right? How is it not worth it? And just how quick she gets to that.
Mm.
Like, this is wrong. This is right. We're gonna do the right thing. Okay. Like that. She has that kind of. It's intuition, it's inspiration, a conscience, I don't know what you call it, but she has it, and I know I can go to her and say, I don't know what to do, what do I do? And she's gonna be right, you know? And if she doesn't know, she'll tell me, I don't know, let's figure this out.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing I love most about her.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, we can find you online, Tim Bauer, 89. We'll connect you and link up everything in the show notes. Is there anything that you want to share that you haven't shared before my final question? Anything you wish people asked you about this, or do you feel like people need to know about?
You know, one thing I'll say is I'm worried about the world right now. I'm worried about kids right now a lot, because I feel like we pursue good things and they make sense, but too often we don't consider the children who are being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unintended. It's no one's intent to do this. But we talked about, for example, we're in the middle of a debate right now. And this is not partisan for me. It's not political, even though everything seems to go that way these days, right?
Yeah.
But the idea of opening schools and what that does, all I'm saying, I'm not going to give the answer to the question. I'm not smart enough to give an answer to that question. But I will say this, that I don't see the kids as part of the debate. For example, the spike, 6 million additional reports of children being abused originating online. This is from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And that's a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And it happened because we, as a society, we decided to shut everything down because of COVID. Okay, do we know the trade-offs? That's all I'm asking. Are we considering the trade-offs? And the concern I have is, you know, the CDC and others have come out. I'm not a scientist, but I can read data. And if you're 60 years or younger, you have a 99.9% chance of surviving. If you're older, it's very, very, very dangerous, and you should definitely take mass precautions, and we should do everything we can to support that. But teachers who create the infrastructure that keep kids from being sexually assaulted,
they,
like 89% are under 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so the real question we should be asking is what's scarier to you?
Mm.
A virus, once we've taken care of the most vulnerable, what's scarier, a virus with a 99.9% survivability? Or the trade-off, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of children being sexually assaulted. We're not even having the discussion. That's my concern.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not smart enough to come up with the actual solution.
Yeah.
But at least have the discussion. And it boils down to this. Kids can't get loud. They can't organize. They can't protest. They can't march. And so we don't hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's on us adults to stand up and be their voices.
Yeah.
And say, we will sit at the table for you. We will make sure you are represented.
Wow.
So that's
something
my...
Something to think about. We need to figure out a solution.
Right. It's hard. These are complex things. I don't have the answers, but I know kids are being hurt, and I know more can be done to make sure they're not.
For sure. Absolutely. So. Well, there's always more we can do, that's for sure. Yeah. You're doing amazing things, man. I appreciate you. I got one final question. That's, what's your definition of greatness?
I think for me, greatness is how much positive impact you can be on others.
Mm.
In fact, I try to make this a rule. I'm not great at this. I'm a believer in it. Okay, I'm not a master of it. But when given a fork in the road, right? A crossroads. You got to make a decision. And we do it every day. Do I do this or do that? I don't know what to do. Which one will help more people? Mm. And if you always take that road, I think that's the definition of greatness.
Yeah. Thought of my man. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, bro.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you, man.
I hope today's episode inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a rundown of today's show with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me, as well as ad-free listening experience, make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel on Apple Podcast. If you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend over on social media or text a friend. Leave us a review over on Apple Podcast and let me know what you learned over on our social media channels at Lewis House. I really love hearing the feedback from you, and it helps us continue to make the show better. And if you want more inspiration from our world-class guests and content to learn how to improve the quality of your life, then make sure to sign up for the Greatness Newsletter and get it delivered right to your inbox over at greatness.com/newsletter. And if no one has told you today, I want to remind you that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.